It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. Welcome back to Money for Lunch. You know, I have to tell you, I'm a little excited because I really expected today's show to be canceled because of all the bad weather. Now, I'm in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, but the show headquarters is routed through New York, and I really expected that to be just overwhelmed, but they've done their usual good job and have been able to clear everything over the weekend. But that's kind of what I was expecting is complete chaos this morning. Over the weekend, over 11,000 flights were canceled, and a lot of people, as you can imagine, were stranded there at the airport. It's just been a crazy, crazy time. But it's good to have you here, and I'm hoping that we're going to be delivering some, well-needed, much-appreciated type of strategies and just some entertaining value to you, our listeners. As always, we appreciate the fact that you guys help us out. Topic suggestion, guest suggestions, you guys make this show happen. And because of you guys, we're like one of the top-rated shows on iTunes, one of the top-rated shows on iHeartRadio, thanks to you. So it's good. Good stuff happening all the time. All right. Today's show, we're going to get it started with Mary King. She's known as the IRS problem-solving attorney, and she is one of our regular contributors. Mary King is also the co-author of the best-selling book, Protect and Defend. Mary's career as an attorney began in 1993 after graduating Stetson University College of Law. Her career in law has primarily focused in the IRS problem-solving area, as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary has been practicing law for over 19 years, enjoys helping clients removing the dark cloud of the IRS. Mary King, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert. Great to be here again.
Well, listen, I want to ask you a question, and this is a selfish question for me and anybody else that might have college kids. So one of my kids, I send her a couple hundred bucks every month to help her with, you know, incidentals, food, bills, whatever. So is that tax deductible, just me sending her the money, or do I need to have her, I don't know, invoice me? Let me start again. Is that tax deductible the way I'm sending her the money like that?
Well, I hate to tell you it's one of these answers that, since I don't actually prepare taxes, I really can't tell you.
All right. Well,
you should
okay.
talk to your tax preparer about that, though.
All right. So let's jump into this. I want to ask you this because I thought this was just mind-blowing. My understanding is if you have unpaid taxes, the IRS may revoke your passport.
That is absolutely correct. In December, there was an act or a bill passed. It's known as Fixing America's Surface Transportation, which allows, and you would think surface transportation and passports really don't go together, but it allows the IRS to revoke or deny the passport of any U.S. taxpayer who has unpaid taxes in excess of $50,000. So essentially,
gotcha.
If somebody wanted to, you know, go overseas or go on vacation, the IRS could actually, I'm sure working with Homeland Security, could, you know, deny them the ability to leave the country.
Wow. Wow.
Yes, wow.
And I guess maybe their thinking is, hey, you owe us 50 grand and you're going to try to leave the country. That doesn't sound good to us. You got to stay here.
Well, and I think part of it also is, you know, they may think that people have money offshore, or which gets into a whole nother, you know, topic. But, you know, that the people have money offshore, or they're taking money offshore, you know, to avoid paying taxes.
Yes. No, totally. I get that. And it makes more sense. You know, when I first looked at that, when you see unpaid taxes, you know, some people might have a couple thousand dollars. But now when you say, hey, you got to have $50,000 or more, now that makes complete sense. Absolutely. We've seen in the news time and time again that some of the biggest unpaid tax bills out there always seem to come from people who could afford it, but for whatever reason are trying to get away with something, and they end up going to jail. And I'm thinking of the Hensleys. For those, you know, immediately come to mind, the Hensleys were a husband and wife team who owned the Hensley hotel chain, and obviously they were very, very well off. I think they were at one point worth like $500 million. And what did they go to jail for? Not paying their taxes and doing stupid tax schemes that just got them in jail. And the thing about it is, it wasn't even a lot of money. I mean, it was a lot of money to me. I think it was like $20 million. But to them, gee whiz, you know, it wasn't that much. And so anyway, it's just it totally makes sense. All right, so let's talk about this.
Can I just give you an example of what's going on with this passport? I had a person come in today, this morning, to talk to me about this very issue. His home, the whatever you want to call it, the main office for his company and where his boss is located is offshore. His boss had asked him to come to the home office to meet with him, and this person has over $50,000 in debt. So he had to tell his boss, I'm sorry, but I can't leave. So it may end up affecting his ability to continue to be employed.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Your boss says, I need you to meet me here. I can't fly because I owe all these back taxes. And yeah, I mean, I could see how that would affect, you know, now your boss has to think, well, you know, your personal problems are hindering your job. I could totally see that being a big issue. Absolutely.
Exactly. And who wants to have that conversation with their employer?
Yeah, I know. No, I that would be one of those that you hope to avoid, you know. But yeah, that would be just you know, it's just anyway, I could just see that. It's just totally embarrassing and, you know, but at the same time, what a motivator to get your stuff cleaned up, right? To hire somebody like you so you can go in there and help clean up this mess.
That's right.
All right, so let me ask you this. This is what tax docs do I need to really keep?
Well, you want to keep anything that is going to back up, for instance, your income or your deductions that you've taken on your tax returns. And the reason, of course, is if you are ever audited, you want to be able to back up the numbers that you put on your returns. And unfortunately, a lot of my clients, you know, they think once the tax return is done, they can shred their information or they can throw it away, which you should really shred it. But you want to keep it for a minimum of 3 years. And the better rule is to at least keep it 6 years. And I know that sounds like a really long time. But the problem is, you know, the IRS can go back 3 years. But if there's income omitted from the return, then they can go back 6 years. If they think there is fraud, they can go back forever.
All right, so let me ask you this. What about taking your documents and, what do you call it, scanning them, making them digital documents and storing them that way? Is that acceptable?
That is actually the best idea, and that's what I, you know, tell my clients to do that. Because the problem is, you know, you get these receipts, and then they fade, and then you can't read anything. And I've also been in audits where that's happened, and, you know, the person had legitimate receipts, but the IRS official couldn't read what was on the receipt. And so what happens in that case is, of course, they lose the amount of whatever the deduction is.
You know, and it's funny you bring that up, because that is one of the when these receipts started generating and started to become commonplace, the first thing when I realized that they faded, and of course you don't realize they fade, or at least I didn't realize they faded until I put them in a file, and then, you know, 9 months, 12 months down the road, you go to use them to complete your IRS, and they're, you know, you can't read them.
Right.
And immediately I thought, man, this is obviously a scam by the IRS. These guys are so tricky now, but I'm sure it's not anything they were involved with. It's just, you know, I think that this paper is manufactured. It's not coming from trees. So it just, I don't know. It's either the ink or the paper that makes the whole thing, you know, white out. All right, let's talk about this. What is the deadlines for 1099s?
Well, for instance, if you hire somebody who is an individual and you pay him $600 or more in a calendar year, you're required to issue a 1099. So, for instance, if you hired a handyman or if you hired a cleaning person or whatever it is, you would have, and they don't have a company, you'd have to issue them a 1099. The deadline for mailing the 1099s out is February 1st, and then the copy that you send to the IRS is due at the end of February.
Gotcha.
And for instance, with the handyman example, let's say that in June of 2015, you had paid him $350. In December, if you pay him another $350, you would have to issue him a 1099, even though each incident was less than $600. It's the total that you pay.
Gotcha. Okay, and so what is the threshold where you have to do a 1099, or does it matter? I mean, if it's $300, you don't, or if it's under $600, you don't, over $600, you do. Is that what it was?
Yes, that's correct.
Gotcha. Okay, and so let me ask you this. Let's say that you are paying somebody like a virtual assistant who might be overseas. Do you still generate the 1099?
It depends on if they're an individual or if they're a company. Because here's the thing. If you want to take that as a business expense, you really need to have the proof that, yes, I paid this person. Here's how much I paid them. Again, because we're always looking at worst-case scenario, you're going to get audited.
Yes.
So you always have to have that documentation to back up, you know, what you paid. And I have, you know, I have a lot of handyman or contractors who, you know, they pay people cash. And, you know, they think they're doing everybody a favor. But the problem is they're really not. And they won't be able to deduct that money as business expenses for their own records. Because, again, let's say you get audited. And then you say, well, yeah, I paid John Smith, you know, $20,000, but you don't have anything to back it up with.
Yeah, and unless John Smith gives you an invoice, right, for all the work that he's done, and it shows that you paid in cash, but if it's, I see what you're saying, but if it's an individual's not going to give you an invoice. John Smith, the company, might give you an invoice that shows paid, but an individual might not, and therefore all that tax deductible, all those tax deductions go out the window.
Well, but not only that, but let's say that you do pay him, but if you pay him cash,
right,
there's no record of that.
I see what you're saying. Yes.
You're not gonna, you know, and I don't even know how you would do this, but, you know, if you have $20,000 in cash, you know, oh, you're going to take a picture of it, you know. I really don't think that's practical.
Right, right. Well, you know what, and it goes to and obviously we're using this as an example, but it goes to show you that, you know, bottom line is you got to think, how is this going to affect my my tax deductions? You got to think, like you said, I may be audited. I got to be able to prove this. I got to have some kind of documentation. So let's say you're paying somebody a couple $1,000s a month, but you're doing it cash. You're obviously doing yourself a huge disservice. And on top of that, it may come back. Not only have you lost that deduction, but I could also see the IRS thinking, well, that's kind of funky. Why are you doing that? Let's see what else you're doing. It can open up a whole can of worms.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You really don't want to get into, you know, trying to hide money going places, because it's, like I said, you're not doing anybody any favors, and especially yourself.
Right. And obviously, if it's a $20,000 job, even over time, you know, where you're paying somebody thousands of dollars over time, look, if they can't take a check, then you probably don't want to be dealing with that person anyway.
You're probably correct, because there's probably other things going on that you know, really just don't want to be involved in.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know what? And sometimes it's not even the tax issue. It's the warranty issue. You know, how are you going to come back and say, hey, you know, your work needs to be fixed. Sorry, you have no documentation that we even have any kind of, a relationship. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about this. My understanding, and I want to get your confirmation on this, is that the IRS is using a new program to target money laundering, speaking of paying people a bunch of cash under the table. So what new programs are going on?
Well, what they are doing actually is, and this is a little technical for me, but what they said is they're using geographic targeting orders that will require title companies, you know, when you purchase a house, you have a title company, to identify if there are actually who the people are behind companies or trusts or whatever it is that are paying all cash. We're all back to the all cash, paying all cash for very high-end real estate in Manhattan or in Miami, Dade County, Florida. So what is happening is, because of this whole money laundering issue, they are wanting to know all about all cash purchases. So, for instance, they are looking at the people that have money offshore and, you know, if they're disclosing it, if they're paying tax on it. So they're really trying to drill down to, okay, who is buying these properties? Where's the money?
Yes. Yeah, and again, that, you know, that makes sense. I could definitely see that, like you mentioned, Manhattan, anywhere in New York, that would be a red flag. Anywhere, I would think, in Florida, that would be a red flag. You know, it's just, it makes sense. I can totally see why the IRS would want to know that. You know, and it's interesting, too, how the IRS, over time, they've gotten more strategic, smarter, if you will, about trying to close up all these little loops. I remember, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, if you were opening up a business, you could fill out a, you know, your EIN number, request form, whatever it's called, and, you know, you're good to go. You fill it out. Now, to fill one out, you know, they want all the, whoever's filling out that form or whoever's the owner of the company, they want that individual social security information and all their, you know, their personal home information. They've really gotten very good at closing up all these little loose ends to make sure that everything's legit.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, Mary, we're out of time. As always, it's good to have you on the show. And guys, if you have any problems regarding dealing with the IRS, unpaid taxes, any kind of IRS issues, you want to get a hold of Mary and her team at taxlawyerflorida.com. It's a very easy website to remember, taxlawyerflorida.com. She'll answer your questions, and she can help you out no matter where you're at. Mary King, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Bert. It was great talking to you.
Absolutely. Good stuff there from Mary King. Always good to know what your rights are or what's happening with the IRS. Now, if you have a bunch of unpaid taxes, it could affect your passport. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. Welcome back. Hey, you know what? One of the great things about Money for Lunch, as you guys can attest to this, we have people here from all areas of life helping us to improve not only our money but our business. I'm a big believer that health is important. Health gives us the juice that we need, the power that we need to get our goals done. And there's nothing worse. We've all seen this where people are super successful. They've literally traded their health for their wealth, and now they got to trade their wealth trying to regain their health. And my next guest is going to help us. Dr. Gil Gajiki is a certified functional medicine practitioner, chiropractor, and patient educator with clients on 4 continents. His clientele includes celebrities, corporate leaders, women stressed by family life and work, computer programmers, athletes, homemakers, radio show hosts, admin assistants, health care practitioners, and doctors. At the Valley Thyroid Institute, he and his staff are revolutionizing the way hypothyroidism and Hashimoto autoimmune thyroid are diagnosed and corrected using drug-free solutions. Dr. Gajiki creates his personalized program with personalized dietary changes, nutritional supplements, vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, and lifestyle enhancements to improve lab test results and reduce your symptoms. Dr. Gil Gajiki, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Good morning.
Good morning. All right, let's talk about this. First of all, explain to me about thyroid and this hypothyroidism. What is all this about? Why is the thyroid so important?
Well, the thyroid is important because it controls all the metabolism in your body. It's the main motor that controls all your metabolism in your body. So when your thyroid goes bad, virtually every system in your body starts to go bad. Oop, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me all right now?
There you are. Yep. There you are.
Yep. Okay. So one of the symptoms, I was doing a little reading when some of this hypothyroidism kicks in, and you correct me if I'm wrong, some of the symptoms are you have, you know, weight issues, both, I think it's mainly in the weight gain area, but it could also be weight loss. Your hair will fall out. You get fatigue real easily, these kind of things. Is that right?
Yeah. And thyroid dysfunction, it's the great mimicker because it mimics so many other conditions that are going on that very often thyroid is the last thing that you check before you decide. And by then it's going on for years and years and years. And, you know, way back, I used to be in the financial industry myself. I actually created a corporation called Healthy Wealthy Concepts. And as you mentioned, you know, people start trading their health for their wealth. And I've always said, look, it doesn't do any good to be rich and sick.
Right. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So by the time you figure out it's a thyroid problem, you've had it for years and years and years, and your body's been dysfunctioning. And so now you've got a big mess on your hands because you not only have your thyroid gland going bad, but you've got your adrenals being an issue. You've got your hormone imbalance. You've got anemia. You got gastrointestinal issues. You have inflammatory conditions, food sensitivities. And it just all starts blending into each other, and it's very difficult to diagnose correctly.
Sure, sure. All right, so let me ask you this. Let's talk about this because if – when you were in the financial industry, what got you – I think you had a personal situation with your good wife, and that was one of the motivations that got you into medicine. Is that right?
Well, I'd been a chiropractor for about 10 years at the time. I was doing finances on the side, and my wife came down with Epstein-Barr. She was a corporate executive traveling the world to different countries for the company's HR department. Came down with Epstein-Barr. Long story short, that Epstein-Barr symptoms gradually got worse and worse and worse. She started getting more and more symptoms. We've been to several doctors. All the blood tests are normal. And she started getting to the point where she started getting pneumonia a couple times a year. Well, she got pneumonia for this one last time, was put in the hospital. I started studying functional medicine, found out that she had a condition called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune condition that attacks the thyroid. I spoke to the doctor, and the doctor's solution to this was thyroid medication forever. And he couldn't explain to me why he's treating a immune system problem with a thyroid medication. That just didn't make sense to me. So we took her out of the hospital, and I started voraciously studying functional medicine, started talking to some of my other colleagues who are better and smarter and more experienced than me in this field. And I learned to treat her own case, and I completely resolved her Hashimoto's case in about a year and a half. She lost 50 pounds. Her hair started growing back. Her heart palpitations went away. Her insomnia went away. Her digestive issues went away. I mean, all her symptoms were reversed without any medication. And that was my sign that there's a lot of people out there who are suffering just like her, who are going through the same situations, and they don't know how to get it resolved.
Well, okay, so walk me through this, because one of the things that I understand from the research that I've done is that, first of all, you have a lot of doctors who, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm just going to say it straight like this. You have lazy doctors who are only going to look at the surface. And so I think there's like multiple tests that you can do for a thyroid function, but I think most doctors only do one or two tests, and that's why they miss the issues.
Yep.
Versus hyperthyroid versus hypothyroid issues, right? And so if they can't diagnose it with the two most common tests, it's like, well, it's not that, let's dismiss it and move on to something else.
Right.
And this is where it gets crazy, because you know, there are some good doctors out there, there's no doubt. But again, I want to say that's the exception. I want to say 20% are probably really good. 80% are what I consider lazy, meaning that they just do the bare minimum and they don't really put any time into patients that require extra assistance, like your good wife, right? I mean,
you're right.
If it wasn't for you, your wife would have been taking stuff forever.
And never gotten to the root cause of the problem.
Never would have gotten to the root cause. And if it got worse, they would have given her more drugs and more drugs, because, you know, medicine is now not about finding the root cause. They're about just prescribing meds, because that's the easiest route to go.
Right. And unfortunately, the medical profession is primarily run by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industries. So
yes,
you only have to do one or two tests to justify a prescription medication for a thyroid condition. That's why they do one or two tests. I don't really want to say that they're lazy. I think that 5 minutes with this patient, so I've got to do the most expedient thing possible. Well, I'll just do these two tests because this will justify medication. And if you're in traditional medicine, if you're a patient and you want to go to the doctors who use your insurance and see the specialist, here are your choices: medication, radiation, and surgery. And they're going to do the bare minimum they need to do in order to justify those therapies.
Mm.
That's
yes.
Bottom line. So when you go to doctors that don't take your insurance, who you pay cash for, you get their full attention, you get as much time as you need, and they do what you need, not what the insurance will pay for.
Absolutely. And I can attest to that. The best care I've ever received is when I had a doctor in Las Vegas. And he was, what do they call it, one of these boutique-type specialists. They don't take insurance, but they will help you with the insurance paperwork. I had the doctor's cell number. You pay, it's like a membership. You pay X amount of dollars a year. You get just the best care ever.
Right, like a concierge
and,
kind of service.
Thank you, exactly what it was. And so I would fly to Vegas two or three times a year. and then eventually they ended up opening up an office in Phoenix. But bottom line is, most people cannot afford that.
Right.
And the reality is that shouldn't be the where medicine is going. It shouldn't be, hey, you know, medicine now has become Walmart medicine, and this concierge boutique type medicine is, you know, the Neiman Marcus, sort of speak, you know, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, we should not all, be reduced to what's the most expedient, fastest way I can come in and out of this situation. But that's what's happened. Look, people get upset about healthcare, but the reality is, we as a people, as citizens of the United States, have done a poor job of holding our people, our politicians, accountable. We've done a poor job of reading, of getting involved in politics. You know, all these laws get passed and people don't take time to read them, and I include myself in that. But I've gotten better over the years. But bottom line is, if you want better health care, you got to put pressure on the politicians. And, you know, who's paying the politicians? The big insurance companies. Who's writing the protocols? The big pharmaceutical companies. And you and I could talk a whole hour on that and not even hit and not even get started. Let's talk about this. So, all right. What's the next step? Let's say that I'm having some of these issues as we've talked about. You know, I'm losing my hair. I'm not sleeping well. I have palpitations. I'm just completely out of balance. What is the natural way to deal with these conditions and clear up this thyroid imbalance?
Right. Well, every person is different. I mean, just like in finances, you can't just give a plan to anybody and say, here, this will work. Everyone is individual.
Right.
So I can get 10 people with the exact same symptoms. They're going to have 9 different protocols. So I've got to evaluate each and every person differently with lab testing. And that's what we do. We do lab tests. We do saliva, urine, blood, stool tests. A full blood panel in my office is 62 different tests. We do 11 thyroid tests, not one or two or three. We do 11. To really find out what the problem is. So that's where it starts. It starts with doing the testing to figure out what kinds of protocols does somebody need based on their lab test results. Then we can give these natural dietary supplement, enzyme, mineral changes to them, monitor their progress, and we see our patients 30 minutes at a time every 2 weeks. And I do this primarily through Skype and phone. Nobody ever has to come into my office. I have a Skype and phone practice. So I talk with people in Germany and Russia and Canada and Australia and other states.
Right. Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, you're worldwide in 4 continents.
Yeah.
So if I think I have these issues, I can connect with you on Skype or on the phone or whatever, and then I can get my blood work done here, then I get the results, share them with you. Is that the way it works?
Exactly. You or the lab email me the results. I evaluate them. We have a phone consultation. I send you the lab results, and then it's like you're sitting across the desk from me. You've got the lab test results in front of you. You're hearing what I have to say about it. I tell you what I found, what it means, what we're going to do about it, and how we're going to do it.
I love it. I love
and
it.
I can do that with anybody in the world. And most of the tests, other than the blood work, are all home-based tests. So I send you a home saliva kit. I send you a home urine testing kit, a home stool sample kit, and I get the results from the lab, and I can create these protocols on the other side of the phone.
Man, that's incredible. And what's nice about this is, again, a lot of people don't understand this, but 90% of most of our symptoms are in our blood work. If not 90%, a large percentage of all symptoms can be diagnosed between saliva, stool, and blood. And
almost
nowadays, what's that?
Almost everything can be diagnosed through those 4 media.
Yes. And nowadays, what's really cool is I think it's called Terranos. It's, you know, where before back in the good old days, they would suck like, you know, 6 pints of blood out of you. And nowadays, because they've gotten the technology better, they really need very little blood to diagnose all these things that you're talking about.
Right. And blood is typically where we start because that gets us the most information in the shortest period of time for the least amount of money. So it's a great place to start.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this because let me see. Where are we at? Where are we at? Okay, we got a little bit of time left. But so let's talk about this. Let's talk about, synthetic thyroid hormone medication. Is this what they put your wife on?
They wanted to put her on Synthroid, but we just never even got to that point.
Okay. So before you even allowed that to happen, you went to work, and what did you find? What is better than this, what do you call it, the natural or synthetic hormone medication? What did you find?
Well, in her case, right, it wasn't a thyroid problem. It was an immune system problem starting to attack the thyroid. And what was causing that immune system problem to attack the thyroid was her diet. She had gluten and dairy and soy in her diet, so we took that out right away. Inflammation, so we squelched the inflammation with natural anti-inflammatory supplements. We rebalanced her adrenal system because she was a corporate executive traveling around the world, and she had an ongoing Epstein-Barr infection, so she had this constant stress to her immune system, which was causing her adrenals to start to go bad, so we rebalanced her adrenal glands. Right? We took care of a gut infection that she had had, and through doing all of these different natural procedures, the immune system stopped attacking the thyroid, and then her symptoms completely resolved.
Gotcha. Now, real quick, I'm not that familiar. What's that?
It really wasn't a thyroid problem at all. It was an immune system problem.
Now, I'm not very familiar with Epstein-Barr. What is that?
It's a virus that 90% of the population contracts.
Really?
Like mono, yeah.
So I could have it. Would I know it? I mean, what are the symptoms for Epstein-Barr?
Fatigue, rundown, insomnia, dry hair. Yeah, all the things. It's just that 90% of the population will contract the Epstein-Barr virus, but it won't be active in everybody 90% of the time. But everyone, 90% of the population, you can do a blood test and you could find that you've contracted, your immune system was strong enough to squelch it.
Gotcha.
But if your immune system is being, you know, bombarded with inflammation and infections and bad foods and adrenal gland dysfunction, it can't fight off this virus. And then what it does, it starts taking it out on the body, which is the thyroid tissue.
Gotcha. All right. Okay. So, and what's interesting about your wife's case, and I think this is probably a good example, a good representation of what happens to all of us, where just like any complex organism, you know, something goes wrong here, and then it gets and you're either not aware of it or whatever. And sometimes we, especially in today's world, where if the answer for being sluggish is more caffeine or more energy drinks, not
right.
You know, not more sleep,
right.
You know,
not
nothing,
find the problem.
You know, yeah, and so our body, you know, starts to go into a spin, right? So where it's not, you know, it's under attack, we're making it worse, and before you know it, now you have not one problem, but you have four or five problems. So as you mentioned, Epstein-Barr, you had this immune, you had this gut issue, you had all these issues that, you know, that were happening simultaneously. And I think she's probably a good representation of what happens to all of us when we get to, especially when we get to a specific age, right, where we think we're supposed to feel like crap.
Right. Yeah, that's not true. You know, there's plenty of older people that feel a lot better than I do.
All right, real quick, tell me what is involved in your Kijiki low thyroid protocol. Once I send you my blood work, then what?
Then what I do is I evaluate it for things called triggers. And triggers were the very things we mentioned, adrenal gland dysfunction, hormone imbalance, gastrointestinal dysfunction, inflammation. So I look for those triggers. Once I find the triggers, then I start prioritizing them. Which ones do I go after first, second, third, and fourth? So that if you've got seven triggers, I'm not going to go after all seven, because then I bombard you with supplements and you'd get sick just from taking supplements. So I prioritize the top three. I work on the top three by giving you different dietary changes, lifestyle enhancements, supplementations to remove the triggers, take care of any vitamin, mineral, enzyme deficiencies. I recheck with you every 2 weeks, and then I retest your labs in 60 to 90 days, making sure your symptoms are getting better as well as your lab test markers.
I love it. I love it. And this is what I'm, you know, what impressed me so much about your protocol is that you start not with one or two tests, but 11 different tests that you're checking for, or
yeah,
things that you're testing for.
Yeah, well, there's 11 tests just in the thyroid panel alone. And then
Wow. There's
vitamin D markers, anemia markers, adrenal gland markers, gastrointestinal markers, a full stealth infection panel in there, full iron panel. So, yeah, there's 62 different tests in my full blood panel, 11 thyroid tests within that panel.
That's amazing. That's amazing. All right, Dr. Gil Kajiki, we're out of time. I would love to bring you back and talk more about keeping ourselves healthy. You mentioned vitamin D. I think that's something that we could spend a show on, because I think that's certainly a supplement that's almost a secret supplement, very underutilized. Dr. Gil Kajiki, thank you so much for stopping by.
All right. Thanks, Bert. Bye-bye.
Good stuff there. Just amazing stuff what can happen to us when we start to fall apart, for lack of better terms. Dr. Gil Kajiki, it's spelled K-A-J-I-K-E. You can find out more about him. Just Google his name, Gil Kajiki, and you can find out. I guarantee you, and again, I don't know anything about Dr. Gil. I don't get any remuneration, but it sounds to me like because of the extensive testing that he does, he could probably solve a lot of your issues. And what's nice is you can do it in the privacy of your home via Skype or phone or email. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back with the confident coach, Sheila Kennedy, right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we're back. My next guest, Sheila Kennedy. Sheila Kennedy is known as the confidence coach. And one of the things that I appreciate about Sheila is that none of us are going to do anything without the confidence, right? You can talk about great ideas. There's a lot of people out there who have great ideas who have gotten nowhere because they lack the confidence. Anyway, Sheila Kennedy, the confidence coach, led by example, from insecure, divorced, single mom struggling to make a living to now best-selling author, speaker, coach. She creates strategies for entrepreneurs to perform confidently so they can grow financially, build more meaningful relationships, take bigger risks, and gain more influence in the marketplace. Sheila Kennedy, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here. I always like spending time with you.
Well, it's always good to have you here. Again, I love what you do. I think that confidence is sometimes so overlooked. It's one of those issues. What do you call it? One of those elements or symptoms that people try to mask in so many ways. But with confidence, you can create so many things. But without it, it's difficult to get anything done or influence people.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think that there's a big misconception that confidence means that you have high self-esteem. And I think that in the writing of Choices to Changes, which you are a featured entrepreneur in, I realized that, you know, I was under that same misconception that I thought confidence was just about feeling good about who you were and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. And it's really something a little bit different. And when I realized what the two were and see how they work hand in hand, that really changed the game for me. And so confidence is actually defined as the ability to trust. To trust that the resources that you need, that the support that you need will kind of show up and that you'll be supported in the moments of your life. Well, if confidence is trusting that the support will arrive, then self-esteem is believing that you're worthy of the support.
Ooh,
and
I like that.
And so, yeah, and so I think that that's, you know, when we kind of wrap our head around that, so we can have high self-esteem, but we might not feel confident about the different elements of building our business because we don't trust that our structure is going to support us, or we don't trust that we're making good relationships with people because we aren't willing to be vulnerable, or we aren't, you know, we just want to sell to people, or whatever, you know, the case may be. So there's areas of our businesses, especially as entrepreneurs, that we may lack confidence in, but that doesn't mean that we don't have high self-esteem, that we, you know, believe that we can do it, that we believe that, you know, it's possible and that kind of thing. So that was, you know, kind of a turning point for me.
Sure, sure. All right, so let's talk about choices for change. Love the title. Because it really,
thank you.
It's really up to us. We do make choices, and so we can decide. We can choose to change or not or whatever. So talk about the book a little bit. What inspired you to write the book?
Okay. Well, it actually started as a conversation with a potential client, and she had read my first book, You Had It All Along. And she said, you know, that was a great book, and that was a blueprint on how to build self-esteem, that confidence at your core that, you know, that self-confidence we talk about.
Right.
She said, that was great. She said, but I did that work 10 years ago. She goes, I need a book on how to be a confident entrepreneur. And in my, I'll say arrogance, I actually said, well, if you truly had done that work, if you truly built confidence, then you would be a confident entrepreneur. So obviously you need to go back and do that work again.
Right.
And that wasn't necessarily true. And what I realized is that there's an organization that needs to take place, as well as having the confidence in yourself. You also need an organization of mindset, of relationships or connections, and structure. So, I set out to write the book on how to be a confident entrepreneur because, you know, if she was struggling with that, I knew she wasn't the only one. And
right.
So I wanted to do that. As I started writing, I told my brother that I wanted to write this book. I was going to write about being a confident entrepreneur. And he said, great, Sheila, that's awesome, but you can't write that book. And I was like, excuse me? and he said, because you don't make enough money. People aren't going to believe you. If you were truly confident, then you would be making millions of dollars. And you're not, so you can't write that book. Nobody's going to read it. So I received that, and I was like, okay, so you're equating confidence and financial success as the same thing, which I don't really buy, but okay, so how can I tell this story? Because I believe that being a confident entrepreneur is actually something, you know, different.
Right.
So how can I tell the story? So I wrote down all of the traits or characteristics that I thought a confident entrepreneur would embody, and I thought about the people that I knew, the entrepreneurs I knew that lived that and succeeded and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so I asked 12 entrepreneurs if they would help me tell the story, and you are one of them. So I interviewed the 12 and shared their story. And so the book is all about the common practices of your best practices. And then each one of you has a, you know, spotlight where I talk about what you do specifically, just you yourself.
Right.
Yeah, and so it was a fabulous learning experience. It what was really cool about the book is that I interviewed the 12 and I started writing, and I realized, well, I didn't realize, but I knew I needed to raise money to publish the book. It's not free. And I didn't have the resources. I was paying my bills, but, you know, I didn't have a whole ton left over to, you know, market the book and all that kind of stuff. So I decided that instead of crowdsourcing or taking out a loan, I was going to do an experiment. And for 60 days, I implemented all of the strategies that the 12 of you shared with me, and to see what would happen, to see if I could raise the money. And if I couldn't raise the money, then I'd go do something else or, you know, figure another way to do it. But let's see if it works. And in that 60 days, I tripled my income. I attracted only my ideal clients. And I was accepting speaking engagements. I was being offered chances to speak, and for the first time in a while. So therefore, I kind of proved that the things that you shared, the practices of confident entrepreneurship, actually make a difference. And that was, you know, awesome.
Yes.
As that, yeah, yeah.
So, no, I love that. I love that. You know, and one of the great things about that story, about that experiment, is that, and I want you to elaborate a little bit on this too, is that in the book you claim that the book will help entrepreneurs to grow financially, build meaningful relationships, take bigger risk, and gain influence in their marketplace. And that's pretty much what you did.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And you know, and here's the kicker, is that at the end of the 60 days, you know, some of the things that I did were daily activities. And, you know, I was busy now serving all of these new clients, and I was also busy trying to write a book. And, you know, between laziness, cockiness, and busyness, I kind of let some of those things slack off. And
right.
As I started letting those slack off, my business fell apart. And so all of the money I raised, I was now living off of. And so I couldn't publish the book. And, you know, everything kind of fell apart and, you know, went down that rabbit hole of, oh, my gosh, where's my confidence? So if I can't pull this all together, you know, what the heck am I doing? And maybe I'm not the one to write this book and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I sat in that for a couple months, and it was, you know, kind of a weird place to be in. And, you know, I finally decided, hey, it was one of those choices that we get to make. You've proven that this works.
Right.
Is it really fair for you not to put this out there? Because this is information that people are going to, that is going to help them be better entrepreneurs. So I started up the practices of confident entrepreneurship once again and raised the money and published the book in December. So for twice in a matter of 2 months, I proved that confident entrepreneurship works. So,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know
so,
what?
It's a success story.
It goes to show you the, you know, what happens to us when we have confidence and we don't. And you gave two great examples there, you know, and if you would have given into your fear, if you would not have built your confidence back up, the book would not have been out there helping tens of thousands of people.
Right.
So hats off to you. I'm glad
you
did that.
Thank you.
And like you said, it's you're a walking, living example. So let's talk about this. There's 12 people in the book. As you mentioned, I'm one of them. But you had other people in the book that mentioned some of your favorite spotlights that you remember from the book.
Sure. Well, there's Jeff Hoffman. He is the founder of Priceline.com. And so he was very instrumental. You know, the thing about everybody that was in the book is I kind of had a personal contact with them in some way, shape, or form. So Jeff Hoffman, I heard speak at a conference, and I really fell in love with all the things that he had to say and that he shared that day, and they really impacted. I loved that Jeff was on a 3-year mentorship tour around the world. You know, he's had all this great success, and now he's giving it back. And working with entrepreneurs from all over the world, third world countries, all that kind of stuff, teaching them the principles of entrepreneurship. I loved that. And so, you know, I really thought that was, you know, he was important to share. Forbes Riley, another one. She's an actress. She's the pitch queen from Home Shopping Network. You know, she has millions of people, you know, surrounding her. She has a fabulous story. that is just, you know, she put everything on the line in order to create the Spin Gym or make the Spin Gym a reality, which is her signature product. And, you know, she mortgaged her home, she did all that. Nobody believed in her. Everybody said that it wasn't going to work. She went on reality TV and they said, no, it's not going to work. We're not doing it. And she believed in it so much. And now she's making, you know, millions of dollars off of it 6 years
now,
later.
Now, what
so,
did she create? What was it that she did? What was
it's
fun?
Called Spin Gym. Yeah, it's called Spin Gym. And it is actually a, I'm going to say Chinese, but it's this disc that you spin and you do exercises around it. And it's like it fits in your purse, it fits in your pocket.
No.
You know, and you can do it anywhere. And it's amazing. And so it's really fun. I hope she gets to be on the show and she can tell you all about it. But, you know, she is just a delight. Joey Garrity, she's another one. She is an entrepreneur. She's a brand strategist out of Hollywood. She works for Walt Disney Pictures and Sony Pictures. And she, you know, is all about collaboration and shining the spotlight on people and, you know, that kind of thing. And she's just, you know, she's a wonderful mentor. She's a wonderful friend, but really has changed the way I look at collaborating with people. You know, we get so stuck in our competition or our competitive mode, and that really doesn't help us ever. And so, you know, Joey was great with that. I mean, there's so many. There, you know, obviously Sarah Newton. She was on Friday.
Yes.
Interviewed Sarah. She's a, you know, leading authority on youth around the world. I studied with Sarah. You know, when I first opened my coaching practice 4 years ago, I studied with her, and she was my coach. Therese Skelly, Karen McMillan. You know, Cheryl Latrey. Cheryl Latrey was on last week.
Yes, real estate.
Keith DiTerti, he's an amazing guy. Like, he just, he owns, like, an insurance empire in Texas, but he lives in West Virginia, and he was at the brink of bankruptcy, and everything was falling apart, and he, you know, decided that he wasn't going to let that be a story, and so he figured it out. He found mentors, he studied, he implemented, he created, and he's, you know, making millions of dollars right now. So, awesome, awesome people. Brooks Hoffis, he's a real estate developer in Canada, one of the most humble men I've ever met, and probably one of, you know, the most successful. He is just an amazing man. I said I would never want to work for anybody again. If Brooks had asked me to, you know, if he had a job for me and asked me to move to Grand Prairie, I would move in a heartbeat. you know, just because I love his work ethic and I love his story. He is very instrumental. He taught me a lot about how to build a team because he, as a dyslexic, he needs to surround himself with people that complement him, that can supply things that he can't do, things like that. And he's so humble about that. And he wants them to succeed just as much, if not more, than he wants to succeed. And, you know, so lots and lots of awesome information that I have learned from all of these people. So that's then Vicki Winterton. She's another one. Vicki is the founder of Expert Insights Publishing, and just, you know, amazing story. She, as a model, so in her early 20s, she was a model, and as a part-time job, she decided she was working for an ad agency. She learned what she thought she needed to know. She liked it so much that she decided to open her own. And within 2 years, she was making 8 figures. And, I mean, she was like 23 years old. And the company grew so fast that she ended up selling it because it just, the vision, she couldn't contain it, you know, enough. And it was growing more than she was ready for. And so she sold it, you know, making, you know, obviously millions of dollars when she was 23 years old. And then went on to found the publishing company that she has today.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, just amazing, awesome, wonderful people that are really just making a difference in the world, but they all have something very important in that they have a very interesting why. And, you know, most of you have had some point in your entrepreneurship that's become messy and, you know, not necessarily great stuff has happened. but you've recovered, and keeping that goal in mind all the time. And, you know, it's that story of recovery that has been really important, I think. And I think entrepreneurs need that. So
absolutely.
We need to know that
well, you
we're
know,
not
here's
alone.
Here's the interesting thing, too, that we grow so much through our struggles, right? We gain confidence mm-hmm. through our struggles. We gain confidence by stepping out of our comfort zone. And mm-hmm. what's interesting, these are two things that we all hesitate or avoid doing. I just find that, you know, kind of interesting. And so when you look at these entrepreneurs that you've highlighted in your book, all of them had some struggles that made them who they are because they kept going, right? They didn't just, you know, hide in the shadows after they had a setback or two. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, as you mentioned, Jeff Hoffman, I bet you this guy's has great stories about some of the stuff that he had to overcome.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with, you know, Forbes Riley, you mentioned nobody believed in her. And, mm-hmm. and again, probably has a lot of great stories and some of the stuff that probably when she was going through it was difficult, but mm-hmm. today carries with it a lot of meaning. And I think that Choices to Change, the book is available on Amazon, is a great book for anybody. And I said this because I had the privilege of writing the foreword. The book is worth millions of dollars to anybody who's an entrepreneur. It's really goes beyond that, because even if you're a stay-home parent, you need confidence. You know, confidence is this thing that if you have it, life is amazing. But if you don't have confidence, then life can be very crappy.
Right. Well, and, you know, there's one more entrepreneur that was in the book is David Day, and he runs the Institute for Social Entrepreneurship. But one of the quotes that David shared with me was, without great risk, there is no great reward. And
right.
so many people are afraid to take risks because they are afraid, you know, to trust themselves, or they don't, you know, there's a whole mess of reasons why people are afraid to take a risk. And when that happens, you know, risk-taking is the hallmark of successful entrepreneurship. If you're not willing to do that, if you're not capable of doing that, then you're going to struggle. And so I think, you know, like you said, anybody that is doubting that they can make risks or take risks, that they can move forward with a project, that they can have an idea and take it from idea to conception and execution, this is definitely a whole lot of inspiration, but a whole lot of concrete practices that you can use. You know, I love your story about how you took the worst producing sales team and within 9 months created the best producing sales team using something as simple as affirmations.
Right.
You know, I love that. And so there's definitely some concrete practices in there that can really change the game for anybody.
Absolutely. No, the book is fantastic. It is one of those books. And again, I want to say this, that because you mentioned risk reward issue, mm-hmm. that goes not only in business, but in life. Look, there are a lot of people out there who are lonely, and the one reason they're lonely is because they lack the confidence to go out there and meet people. There are a lot of men who are struggling to meet their, quote, you know, girlfriend or their wife.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're afraid. They don't have the confidence to ask and go through the we'd call it the risk-reward scenario of asking women out and going through that process. There are people out there who would love to have a family, but they lack the confidence, right? So mm-hmm. so this thing of confidence, big risk, big reward scenario, I think applies to everything. You know, it applies to your health, to your personal life. Mm-hmm. Again, the book is about, and I talked in the beginning of the segment, is that it will help you build more meaningful relationships, take bigger risks, and gain influence in the marketplace. Or at least, you know, you can substitute marketplace for it will help you gain influence in your space, period. So it's a great book. It should be part of everybody's arsenal of books. Sheila Kennedy, the Confidence Coach, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
All right. Thanks, Fred. I appreciate it. It's good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Good stuff there from Sheila Kennedy, the Confidence Coach. It's a fantastic book called Choices to Change. And the choice really is up is really ours, right? It's up to us. Most importantly, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.